Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 499. In this episode, Scott talks with Monica Dinkalescu from Google about web components and the Polymer project.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with Monica Dinkalescu from Google, and she works on Google Chrome and Polymer. How are you?
Not too bad. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. This is my first ever podcast.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, you have done some amazing stuff on the internet, some of which we're going to discuss today. But I think the most important, the most influential thing that I've seen that you have worked on was a DNS server that does what?
It resolves everything into cats. So I thought that the thing that everybody wants in their life is to look at cat images, which is true. But instead of going to search for your images, I thought that you should just open your browser, try to go to anything useful, like Google or your email, and instead of getting anything useful, you would get a cat. And that's what that does.
Is that just images or like any HTTP request is a cat?
It's images. It's images from Imgur. So there's this static Go server that just gets cat images from Reddit and like stores them there for you. And it has to be a static IP. So that's what it does. And it just gives you a random cat image from Imgur.
That's so cool. I wonder if you could use that for like layout. Like there's different tools that let you find like when you need images and you don't have the images.
Yes. I thought my next troll one, so the greatest one is that if you have like open Wi-Fi and you let people connect to it, you can like mess up your router and they will get cats too. So you can just troll your neighbors. And then it can get really creepy. Like you can randomly flip images on a web page, but randomly so that sometimes you get everything backwards, but sometimes your website looks normal.
That's so evil. I think that the fun thing about messing with like DNS and the web like that is that everyone's going to think they have a virus or a bad plugin or an extension, and it's all done down, you know, upstream.
Instead, you've just had Monica's amazing Wi-Fi of fun.
So the thing that I wanted to talk to you about that I want to better understand is what web components are, what Polymer is, and what it means to the average Jane and Joe out there who are listening and doing web development.
Cool. So let's start with web components. So we've been writing HTML for a long time, and we have like divs and A's and inputs and buttons, and that's about it, right? Mm-hmm. And the platform hasn't really changed. Sometimes we get new input types, like input type equals date, and we're excited, but it's still just input, right? We haven't got a new tags. So web component is basically your own custom element. You get to create, I don't know, Monica's cat box of cats, and it's a tag. It's an HTML tag, and it's as if the browser always knew what that was.
So you're saying literally, I would say open brace or open bracket, Monica's crazy box of cats.
Yes.
Close brace. And that is a tag, just like table.
That is a tag. Yeah. That is an element. Like table is an element, is just your thing and you've developed it. And your browser knows what it is. It knows what it means. And this is coming natively. So it's very slowly progressing because it's actually really hard to implement this in all the browsers. But this is what a web component is. And it's really nice because much like HTML works with everything on the web, because it's just an extension of HTML, it's going to work with anything on the web. So it's going to go work with whatever crazy framework you're using, React or Ember or Bootstrap, or it doesn't matter. It's just HTML.
When people learned HTML like 15, 20 years ago, one of the first things that we teach when we were teaching HTML like 3 and is that we would make a tag and then we'd make up a tag, you know, open bracket Scott, and we would simply notice that it was ignored.
Right. So there's magic now that's being built in the browsers where you would have an associated like HTML file. So if you want to open bracket Scott, mm-hmm. it would have to be like a Scott dash something because we're allowing one words to belong to the browser in case the browser wants to extend it.
Oh.
So you would have, let's say, Scott dash element. God.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like date. Like if I was to make my own calendar.
Exactly. Scott-date. And then you would have a corresponding HTML import that would be scott-date.html. And that's what you would define what scott-date means. So it would have markup. It would have some, its own HTML, what it looks like. It would have some styles. It can have like a ton of JavaScript about what it actually does. Mm. But at the end of the day, all of that gets built up in this nice little box called scott-date.
Okay. So how is that different from me saying div class scott-date?
Very good question. So I really like HTML and I really like CSS. And there's this thing that drives me insane where CSS is not encapsulated in any way. Everything's global. All the styles are global. So if I, you know, import two libraries, this is the example that I usually do. You're styling your application and you have a button and you're not really great at CSS. Are you going to import these two random libraries that are going to style this button and make it really pretty? Because you want it to be, one of them is going to be glowing and one of them is going to be, I don't know, shiny. But if those libraries are designed poorly, they might ask you to add the same class to these two different buttons. And there's no way in CSS to tell it, listen, I just want this particular CSS import to apply to this particular button. It's going to apply to anything in your application. And the thing about web components is that everything's encapsulated to that element. So it doesn't matter what CSS classes your web component uses. They just live inside of that element. You can think of it as a castle. This is the analogy that I usually use. It's a castle and everything lives inside of it. So it's not going to go out and it's not like your other styles are not going to like leak in.
Ah, so it's a scoping thing.
Yes. So now when you drop, it's exactly how you've never been able to like interact with input by just like making random classes and like side effecting input type equals date to be pretty. It's always ugly no matter what you do. So scott-date, whatever it uses, it just stays inside scott-date. It doesn't come out. It's a standalone component.
Because I think we know the web well enough that we're always impressed when things can change a page or inject themselves into the page without messing up the page. Like,
right.
One of the most interesting things that I've ever seen was bookmarklets like Delicious or Pinterest that almost add their own interaction model and inject divs into a page with their own style and their own everything. And they're so smart about scoping that they don't mess up the page. For anybody
yeah,
else.
But that's sort of magical because they use like super obscure class names that they're hoping they're never gonna hit.
Ah.
But I made a really dumb bookmarklet once that basically translated English words to emoji. And the way I would do it, I would just like parse every single word in the page. And if I knew what that was called in emoji, I would just replace it. But I just basically wrapped my span in a tag called emoji and I knew how to style it. So eventually I hit a page where if you use my bookmarklet, it would just like break everything. And it was a disaster.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the other super nice thing about web components is that because they're HTML, they work with everything. So sometimes you're going to run into problems like, I don't know, you can't use Ember and React together, right? They're not things that you can drop in a page and they're going to commute. Even though they have an idea about their own custom web components, you can't just use them together. But because web components are part of the platform, they're a thing that the browser cares about. They can be used with any framework. So they're super reusable and super friendly.
Mm-hmm. Why do some people think that web components is like controversial?
Because changing the DOM is hard and scary, I think, is one of the things. And because they would allow you to, you have to trust that this component that you're using has been developed well. But I think this is the same problem that you have with any library. Like the moment you commit to using somebody else's code, you have to trust that their code was, you know, written in a good way. So sometimes you can use maybe web components that are slow, that are going to like slow down your rendering. But it's, I think that's going to start being fixed as they become more popular because they're so new that right now we don't have any web components. We have Polymer web components because, side note, Polymer helps you write web components. But because web components right now only work natively in Chrome, basically, they're not very popular. Nobody wants to write just apps just work in Chrome.
So let's talk about that. You said they work natively in Chrome. I think that people who are listening may have heard the word polyfill before. Mm. Help me understand the difference between when someone says, hey, this would be cool if the web did this, then they write a JavaScript library that kind of like fakes it or 99% makes it work, and then it becomes, quote, native.
Yeah, so polyfill is actually really funny. It comes from the brand of this English thing. You know when you have a hole in the wall and then you have this like white specky thing and you put it in your hole and then you paint over it and
we
it fills
it
the wall?
We call it spackle on the west coast of the US.
Spackle. It's called polyfill. The brand is called polyfill in the UK. So this is exactly what it is. You have a hole on the web platform. For example, the Shadow DOM. The Shadow DOM doesn't exist, let's say, in Internet Explorer 10. And you really want to use features from the Shadow DOM. So there's a JavaScript library that's going to run before your page loads. It's going to be the first thing that your browser hits. And the only thing that this JavaScript library is going to do is basically fill this gap that you want to use. So it's going to fill it with Spackle, and then you're going to paint over it. And now when your page is ready to load, your code is like, oh, look, that hole is fixed. I know exactly what that code is supposed to do. So you now have this magical functionality that isn't natively available in your browser.
Okay, so I've got a browser that understands, you know, geolocation natively. It goes right and uses geolocation. But if I have it when it doesn't use geolocation, maybe I can fake it.
Exactly, with a polyfill.
With a polyfill, okay. So then you're saying that web components is something that we, you know, we the people or some people want to be native.
Yes.
It isn't.
Yes.
Are there polyfills to fake it?
Yes. So we have finally agreed, all of us as browser vendors, that web components are a thing we like. And web components has about four different polyfills under it. There's this thing called the Shadow DOM, which lets you basically encapsulate all of this custom HTML into like one new, brand new tag. There's HTML imports. There's the actual custom element. So how do we actually tell the browser this is a custom element? And there's a fourth one that I can't think about right now.
Is it because you can't remember it or because it's weird?
Because I can't remember.
Templates.
Templates. Thank you. So yeah. So templates are how you would thank you so much. Are how you would reuse these in every, you would reuse the same basically, blueprint for every element.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And yeah. Those all seem like things that are like individually like totally useful things we would want. Like I know people have been talking about the Shadow DOM for like 5 years, and everyone's always wanted imports, and they do all sorts of fake things
right
with CSS and JavaScript to make imports work. And everyone loves templates.
Right. So you could have HTML imports without having the Shadow DOM. So this is why we keep them separate, and each of them we polyfill individually. Different browsers have implemented different things. So I think Firefox is now actually catching. Like, I think Firefox is starting to have the Shadow DOM possibly behind a flag. And I know web components are coming to like Edge and Safari. So everybody is like working slowly on each of these four areas. Polymer makes something called webcomponents.js, which is a polyfill that you can drop in your application to suddenly get web components working, but not the Shadow DOM. So Polymer 0.5 back in the days used to actually try to polyfill the Shadow DOM. So make up basically this like super fancy and encapsulated DOM, but it's actually really hard to do it from outside of the browser. So we stopped doing that.
Okay. So let me see if I can paraphrase so I understand what's going on.
Sorry.
No, this is good. This is not sorry at all. You're educating the people and myself included. So web components is the name for a collection of specifications that are separate, individual, and useful on their own. Those are custom elements, which we like the Scott or the cat element or whatever, or Scott dash to date. Then there's HTML imports, there's templates, and then there's a Shadow DOM.
Mm-hmm.
Chrome supports these all natively right now
because
it's almost like that's where, you know, Chrome gets to play and practice and get this stuff working. And then that provides pressure on other vendors, and then the web gets better for everybody.
Right.
Then I can get polyfills that are JavaScript libraries to make it like these things are working on other browsers that don't
yes
support it natively.
Yes.
And there's more than one example. Like I know Mozilla has got one called Xtag. Is
yes
that that's their polyfill for web components?
Yeah. So it's much like having different rendering engines. It's good to have different polyfills because they might do different things. And because it's just JavaScript, everybody can write their own polyfill for things.
Okay.
So yeah, Xtag is one of them.
Is Polymer a polyfill for web components?
Polymer is a little bit more than that. So Polymer is a library that helps you write web components. So it comes with a polyfill, and it comes with a lot of sugaring around actually writing these custom elements, because writing custom elements right now, it's a lot of you having to do things manually. So it's exactly how you would create in JavaScript an HTML element manually. So you do document dot create element, span, and you would start adding attributes to it by hand. And it's really annoying. And you would have to do the same thing with Scott-date.
Okay.
So Polymer wraps it all around in like this sugary, delicious goodness. It's butterflies and unicorns. And you get to you know, write your markup in HTML and you write to get your, write your styles for your custom element in CSS. And there's like JavaScript that tells you what that element actually does. And then Polymer wraps it up and talks to the browser and tells the browser, listen, I have a custom element for you. This is what it is, and does all the grunt work for you.
Okay, cool. So I'm looking at the Polymer page and there's a really great example, which is like extremely clear. I want to have a Google map. In the past, I would make a div, I'd give it a certain ID or a certain class, I'd include a bunch of crap, I'd have to include CSS and JavaScript and all that kind of stuff. Now I say, here's the polyfill, which in this case is Web Components-Lite.
And here's the Google map.
And yeah, and then I import the element, which is googlemap.html, and I say google-map. And now that google-map, that kind of reminds me about data-star, which was like an attribute you would put on HTML5 stuff.
Right.
Where data hyphen is like a prefix and then anyone else can put anything they want to at the end, right?
Right. But you can only prefix like a div, right? So,
right.
So at the end of the day, you're still just like copy pasting this giant block of code into your main document and everybody can inspect it. Everybody can style it by accident. Like if your thing that has the data dash map, would have a class, I don't know, called map, and somebody else also uses a class called map, well, that element's hosed.
Ah, there we go.
But if you include google-map, it doesn't matter what it does. You just now have google-map, just like you would have a div.
Okay, so then I can have google-map or Microsoft-map and all that kind of stuff, and they live together, and they don't hurt each other. And it's
cats
totally
and
fine.
Dogs living together. It's perfect.
So... but what about this thing that we complained about for years called vendor prefixes? What's the difference between having a web component that has a prefix and vendor prefixes? Because vendor prefixes, we agreed, were bad.
Right. So this isn't – so it's the Google is not a prefix here. It's just we're trying to explain it's actually using the Google Maps API, right? It could be called anything you want. It's just an element.
Okay.
For example, Polymer makes elements, the things that I work on are called paper dash, and they're just like material design implementations of really common UI elements, like a paper button, which is the material design look of a button.
Okay. So it's just really, a scoping exercise.
Yeah. But like if you use google-map in IE or google-map in Chrome, it's going to look and it's going to behave exactly the same. It's not a different element. It's not implemented differently for a browser, much like how div works exactly the same in IE and exactly the same in Chrome.
Okay, that makes sense. So vendor prefixes were bad because it was something that didn't work everywhere, and it was a way of saying, our browser is special and here's a thing we made up. Well, web components and saying like a prefix, it's just like a namespace in Java or a namespace.
Right, exactly.
You're just kind of setting aside some scoping area.
And
right. Then google-this, google-that. And
yeah,
it'll work everywhere.
Exactly. You could call it anything. Prefixes were, I'm Chrome and I've come up with border box, but I'm really nervous about calling it border box because nobody else has border box. So I'm going to call it, you know, webkit-border box because we use webkit, and then Mozilla comes around and mistakes were made. This is the future that we live in where boxes are hard.
Okay. So is this, like, remember how everything was like Web 2.0, blah, blah, blah. Like, it does kind of feel like web components is the next step for the web.
God, I hope so. They're my favorite thing ever.
Does it really just make life better?
They really do. You get to stop, like, writing this div soup that you always have to write where you're like, I'm going to make this really fancy animated image carousel and I have 17 nested divs and images and it's great.
And now Divitis.
Yeah. And now you just have to, like, you can put that away in a closet and be like, listen, somebody has done this. Look at my nice little markup in my main index.html. I'm just saying image carousel and that's it.
What about styling? Because I think about, like, when I bring in, like, YouTube embeds, that ends up bringing in an iframe, which is kind of an iframe is kind of a poor man's scoping exercise.
Yes.
You know, but inevitably we want to reach into that and style that. So we want to change stuff. Could I change a web component from the outside?
Yes. So this is also a spec we're working on. So here's the thing. Input type equals date. Surprise. It's actually a custom element. It's using the shadow DOM behind closed doors, but nobody's been telling you because the web platform keeps secrets away from you as a developer. But it's actually, I know. So, input type equals date. Whenever you click on it, you get this like giant drop down that has the date, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you've never seen it in markup. Like, you only see input type equals date. It lives somewhere. And that's the shadow DOM. So the shadow DOM is not exposed to you, in your markup. And you can't actually get to it and style it. Like, it's very hard to actually style that drop down. There's these, like, magical WebKit selectors.
Wait a second.
Pseudo selector. Yes.
So you're saying that the little drop down, the calendar that I can't see or touch, but I know it exists.
Yeah.
In my mind, I just put that in the, it was done natively category.
It is, but it's in the shadow DOM.
But it is in the shadow DOM.
Yeah. We've always had shadow DOMs for these things like that. It's just, we haven't had them as developers, which I think is unfair. So you can't style it, right? Because it's in the shadow DOM, it's in a castle. So think of a web component as a castle. You can't just go into that castle willy-nilly. So, the spec that we're working on is custom properties. And this is basically you as an element designer have the ability to say, listen, element user, I know you're going to want to style this thing. So you're going to probably want to style the background of it and like the font style and the colors. So I'm going to expose these CSS properties to you. And they're going to be prefixed with a dash dash so that the browser knows they're like special properties that should look into the shadow DOM, but they're just normal CSS properties and you would use them as you would CSS properties. So ideally, in a perfect world, input type equals date would have the CSS property called drop-down background and drop-down button color and drop-down button style. And you could make it actually match your application instead of the thing we have now.
Okay. So that's interesting. That means that the web component makes a conscious decision to expose these things.
Because you don't want to give the user too much power, right? Like the good benefit of web components is that they're encapsulated. So random, you know, CSS libraries won't just like stomp all over and be like, herp, I'm going to make everything blue. So you as an element designer are going to be like, these are the things that I know you're going to want. And I'm going to give them to you so that you can style them if you want them. You don't have to style them. You can use a default style. But if you want to, here are the properties that you care about.
You know what's so crazy about this is it feels like HTML and the web is actually becoming a proper application platform with a maturity.
Right? And everything is basically HTML. It's just better. We have finally like made HTML useful.
But even more like web components, I'm thinking about the past where, you know, you've got fields in C++ or, you know, and then you've got public properties. Custom properties are really public properties.
Yes.
That have a backing field.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. Okay, so then dash dash is the convention that
use. Dash dash basically tells the browser, I'm not typing junk. This is the thing you care about.
I see. Okay, so then Scott dash date is totally scoped. It's its own castle, but I kind of punch a hole in a couple of spots and I'll say dash dash.
Yeah, I call them bridges. You make bridges. Little bridges to
I
get
love
into
your
the
analogies.
Castle.
That's excellent. Okay, so, you know, dash dash accent color.
Yes.
Or dash dash main color. And now only those things can be changed.
Yes. And because that's a little bit annoying. So it can get, like, imagine you have made a button and you're like, listen, I've given you opacity and I've given you background color. But then your user comes in and it's like, oh, I really want padding. And you're like, cool. Here, have padding. And then it's like, oh, padding is great. Opacity is great. I really want, I don't know, text shadow. So we are also working, on creating this spec called mixins. So basically, you've exposed these like specific properties that you think are super useful, but because you don't have, you know, future vision, you're not a mind reader, you can also expose these like hooks where you can put a bag of properties. So let's say in the button, here are all the things that I've thought about. In case there's anything I haven't thought about, here's your hook called apply, like it's called, let's say, I don't know, paper button. And you can define an entire block of CSS properties in there, like normal CSS, and it's just going to get teleported in there. So now you can style things with like the explicit custom properties that somebody defined for you and also a giant bag of properties in case there's something we haven't thought about. Because we want this to be like super easy to use. We don't want to make it hard for you.
So does that mean though that I might pick a web component from some vendor or some open source, my favorite open source person, and then I find that they did not expose something?
And then I
shake my fist because they didn't let me do that.
Yes. So hopefully they've done it correctly. If they haven't, and this is a thing that happens, like it's happened to us, we haven't thought of everything. Thankfully, everything's open source. You can just open an issue, and because your favorite person actually checks their issues, they're going to fix it for you really quickly.
But you said I can open an issue, but I think about things like override, which is both super powerful but also totally evil.
Oh, so... yeah, so mixins are basically kind of like override. So if you've created a mixin hook there, Mm-hmm. You as a user could be like, I know you've given me these styles. I'm just going to stomp all over them. But unless the unless the element designer made that for you, you're not going to be able to just stomp over anything because it's a castle, right? If you don't have a bridge to get into that castle, you can't get into the castle.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. All right, so I understand web components and I understand what the collection of things that are moving the web forward are that roll up into this thing that we call web components then. So then Polymer includes a polyfill that
yes.
gets me started. But then what is Polymer itself? It's much more than web component.
Yeah, so Polymer is a library that makes this super easy to use. So if you want to write your own web components, they're much easier than like what native code lets you do right now. So you get to, you know, write your markup, write your styles in normal HTML, like you would normally do it. And you don't have to worry about how to actually register this element, how to tell the browser this is a custom element. We do all of that for you. And on top of that, we also try to create a giant library of ready-to-use elements that you can just like pick up and drop in your application and not actually worry about how they're implemented and what they do. They're just like, they look like material design elements and you can just use them anywhere you want.
Okay. And you, since you do work for Google, presumably, is it true that Google is like a consumer of these things? Is Google going to start building stuff with Polymer?
Yeah, it's actually super exciting. So there's like this giant adoption of Polymer inside of Google. So there's a couple hundred internal apps that use it, but there's really big apps that we're super excited about. So YouTube Gaming recently released, and that's written all in Polymer, and Google Play Music and Google Patents, I believe, Patent Search, all of these are written in Polymer. And yeah, and they're like out there and a lot of people use them and they're using code that I write, which is really exciting.
That's pretty slick.
Yeah.
So is there a reason that the person who's maybe listening to the show shouldn't use Polymer? Like maybe they just have to go to work and I don't know, use a horrible browser that's like dead or.
We support everything. So IE10 and up and Safari 7 and up. So if you're using IE6, I'm very sorry for you. Also stop using IE6.
Yeah. But and 7 and 8.
And 7 and 8, please. And maybe 9. I would like to kill 9 with fire, nine too. But if you're using any of these like past two releases browsers, we support them. So your things work.
Okay. So any reasonably evergreen browser is a good thing.
Exactly. And we try to stay up to date with all the things. So whenever anything changes, any of the new browsers, we try to catch up with that.
Mm-hmm. And if I go to webcomponents.org, I can see like this chart that says, you know, here's, you know, green for the ones. It's basically the can I use for web components.
Exactly.
It looks like under for IE and Edge, a bunch of stuff is under consideration. Is web components something that is just a Google thing or do you all like hang out with the Edge people and tell them that they should do it too? Or how does that work?
Yeah, no. So it's definitely web components is not a Google thing. Web components is a web platform spec thing. And there's this thing called face-to-faces where all the browser vendors get together and they talk about it. And they're like, listen, we would like to talk about the shadow DOM. We think the shadow DOM should be implemented. And then all the browsers talk about their concerns, what they think they should happen. And then we all agree on a thing that's going to happen. Edge is actually super excited about everything, which is one of my favorite things ever. I'm super excited for Edge to become a thing.
You like the Edge browser, is what you're saying?
I do, yeah. I think it's great. I think that, well, because IE wasn't going to get shadow DOM anytime soon. But Edge is actually implemented. There's somebody who's working right now on it. And there's somebody on Safari who's working on the shadow DOM spec. So these are things that, you know, the future is coming. The future is here. It's no longer under consideration. It's
That's
a thing.
Good to know. I was worried that Safari was going to become the new IE.
Safari was going to be. I have rants about this that I'm going to be super nice about. But no, up until recently, Safari was not very on board with any of the new future specs. But now they're finally
woken up. They've woken up.
They've woken up. I think it's people got angry with them. So
okay, that's cool. So they're listening. So then we won't maybe have a new IE. Everyone will be evergreen together.
Yes. So in like the future that I dream about in like a year or two is that you no longer need to polyfill these things, and that's going to make everything faster because polyfilling is not actually polyfilling is a little slow, right? You have to do a little bit of work before your page renders. So in the future, everybody's going to speak web components. So now we can focus on We can focus on Polymer writing libraries that help you write easy web components versus doing a lot of work so that Safari understands what a web component is.
Now, if I go to elements.polymer-project.org, there's this kind of cool what's the word here?
Catalog.
This is catalog, but it's done like a table of elements.
Yeah. So it's where we have this thing where we thought about the elements being like chemical, like the table of elements in chemistry.
Right. The periodic table.
Yeah. So we have lines, like product lines of elements. So iron. I'm Canadian. I'm sorry. I pronounce iron really funny. Everybody makes fun of me.
I'll say iron when you say iron.
So they're like our core elements. They're what like the building blocks of things. They're not pretty, but they're the functionality of things.
Oh, okay.
Because that's kind of what iron is. And then on top of it, it's paper. So paper is material design. It's shiny. It's pretty. It's, you know, glowy and all the good things. And then we have something called the gold elements. And the gold elements are, you know, shiny e-commerce things. So they're like credit card validators and things that you can make a checkout form so that it's super easy to make checkout forms on your website.
Now, this is where I think things get really interesting because I've built large banking systems. I've built e-commerce systems. And the idea that I'm doing this all with input type equals text.
No, yeah, please don't.
It's so stupid.
Yeah. So we've created things like there is a gold CC input. So it's basically, it looks like a shiny text field. And then you start typing your credit card, and it will validate. It'll be like, yeah, this is a valid MasterCard. This is not a valid MasterCard. This is gibberish. You have type in gibberish. And we have this for like zip codes and CVC validators that, because CVC has different rules based on, you know, is it a MasterCard? It's an Amex and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely convinced, like, this is the future. This is the way. Like, if you didn't work at Google, let's say you worked at like a random insurance company.
Yes.
And you're in the middle of building like the next great text boxes over data system.
Yes. I think this is a future because I think it's been 20 years that we've been using input type equals search and it's clearly not working out and we have to do better. And I think I want to believe in the web platform. I think the web platform's going to win. And I think this is part of it winning.
Very, very cool. Well, I really appreciate you chatting with me today.
Thanks so much. This was awesome.
Awesome. So I'm going to put links to everything in the show notes to Monica's speaker deck account, which, by the way, I'm totally jealous. all of your decks look way better than mine.
Thank you.
So I kind of slightly hate you because your slides are awesome.
I can teach you all of these things. This is learnable.
Okay, well, maybe that's another show where you teach me how to make decent slides because I need to step up. My slides look like they're from the 90s.
Awesome.
And I'll put links to Polymer Project and to her speaker deck and Twitter, as well as web components. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.